Welcome back to Aligned, the podcast for the executives of emerging middle market companies and even larger middle market companies. Today, we're picking up from our last conversation with Ed Rush from Command Alcon. Before that, Ed, what was the name of the company you were with?
Alemica.
Alemica. So your experience is B2B, and it's deeply in the construction space.
Well, industrial space.
Industrial space.
Yeah, Alemica was a supply chain, or is a supply chain platform for large industrial manufacturers in the chemical, oil and gas, mm-hmm. and other sort of gritty environments.
Yep. So let's assume that 90% of the people listening today are not in this space. Why should they listen?
Oh, these are universal truths that apply broadly across all kinds of industries, quite frankly. And I think one of the pathways to success, and I think you hear it all the time, and perhaps too many marketers believe it, is our industry is different.
We're
not the same like all those other ones. We're the exception, not the rule, et cetera, et cetera. And I've yet to actually genuinely find that to be true.
I've been doing this for 29 years. I counted them up the other day, just over 5,000 engagements. And yeah, I mean, really what you want from a marketer, from an outside counselor, is somebody who's done it a long time that sees the pattern, because then they can know how to fix it. That's what you want from your doctor. That's what you want from, yeah. You know, you want somebody who can see a pattern. So I always find it interesting when people try to convince me that there's a lot of difference at their company. Like they want to argue that they're not part of the pattern. No, absolutely you are. And that's how I can be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. Not only the identification of seeing that pattern, then I think where the real gymnastics lie, if you will, mm-hmm. is then being able to successfully apply the truths of that pattern within the cultural an operational place where that company is today.
And that is truly unique.
Yes. And right. Springboarding that forward to where then that evolution can happen in a very healthy way, where everyone feels like yep. they're part of that journey, as opposed to someone just dropped the bomb into what I've thought to be true for 10 years. And now you're a bad guy.
Right. Done that too. So macroeconomics is the study of the aggregate of how the economy behaves, right? Yeah. So we're going to take macroeconomics and work it toward marketing. So if macroeconomics is all about how much money is in the economy and how that money is moving around, well, if we're B2C marketers, that certainly directly impacts our business in just a really short term, right? The more people unemployed, underemployed, the more money consumers have to spend. If they're higher employment levels, that's great. That's easier, I think, to connect those dots. And it's not that the B2B exchange relationship is unique in that you can't use economic indicators to see what's going to happen, but there's a lot of complexity, which is what I love about B2B. Because there are multiple decision makers. There's highly competitive environments. There's large CapEx expenditures often. It's just a brilliant, wonderful world to try to understand. Yeah. So if we're B2B marketers and, our talent pool might come and go and change, our customer bases might be evolving based on the economics. Overall, the better the population's doing, the more revenue our customers will have. And all that's true. But what do we do with all that? So, I know as a B2B marketer, I follow the Baltic Dry. I think it's just a really interesting indicator because it's so nuanced. And anybody listening to today that's a B2C company is going, the Baltic Dry Index? What's that? It's just how much stuff's on boats right now floating mm-hmm. around, right? Mm-hmm. I do find it interesting in today's times, like all the oil that's stuck on boats right now, is that going to impact the Baltic Dry? And I'm not an expert in understanding how that happens. I did look at the Baltic Dry pattern for the last 5 years. And from 2016, we're actually back about to where we were. You know, the delightful spike of 2019 and then the delightful decline of 2020. So, I mean, just economics is really interesting. So, I share all that to set you up with pain. Mm-hmm. Right. There's a lot of pain in all that's gone on, even recently. But let's say in the best of times, I mean, you can look at the Baltic Dry back in 2016. it had a massive decline. And there's these normal spikes, these normal fluctuations in the way things are built, manufactured, and how much raw materials out there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Help me untangle this. Help the executives who are listening look at acute, chronic, intermittent pain in a context of, I think where you're going is flipping the point of view from yourself to what the people who are buying your stuff are thinking about.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And it's interesting you mention that index from my previous experience at Elemica, being a global supply chain, which was very dependent on transoceanic shipping, that those are the types of factors that were definitely in play when having those discussions with customers and trying to understand where things are going. And there's several examples of other components that go into those macroeconomic questions that people have when they're investigating their supply chain. But I think the challenge that I put out to all marketers is, regardless of whether that is part of your world or not, it's complex. And you as a marketer should be the one leading the simplicity from that complexity. And how do you distill all these factors and connect the dots between them and be able to articulate a journey forward in a way that is done from a business mindset and what's best for the business? And then ultimately, the better you understand that and the space that you're serving, you can better plug into what it is your customers are really thinking about trying to accomplish and become a true business partner for them.
I love it. So we have something we call cognitive marketing here, and it's the way we break down sales cycles and the way we break down the way individuals are thinking and what their needs are as they move through the consumer decision journey. Well, part of that points to, there are scientific ways, we mentioned patterns, there are scientific ways to look at the way people make decisions. And one of those, out of some science in UCal Berkeley, we call pain mapping, which sounds kind of aggressive, doesn't it?
I like it.
Yeah. So, oh, you're one of the weird ones. Okay. So the science out of UCal Berkeley shares, and it's an obvious insight, that as humans, we will do just about anything to avoid pain. Logical, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we do it every day. I buy a car that has better, I was talking with you about a truck I'm interested in. Well, one thing I think, I don't know if it's a rationalization or if it's a truth, but it's got all this safety stuff, right? So I want to avoid the pain of having a wreck. I also want to avoid the pain of having just the hassle of having to get something fixed. So if my truck can have the ability to stop itself if I miss something, then that's great. I'll buy that. Mm-hmm. I'll pay a premium for that, in fact. That's maybe an overly simplified consumer example. But so the science goes on and talks about, there's three types, it breaks down pain into three areas. It says there's, everybody has a personal pain, everybody has strategic pain, and everybody has financial pain. So if the science is correct there, do you want to kind of rock through each of those and what those might mean to B2B marketers? I'm throwing it a curveball right now.
Well, we can. I think we can map the perspective I was proposing to you against that. I can see how those two connect. But at the end
of the
day.
All right, you first. You go.
No, so at the end of the day, though, you're right. The reason why I like the pain mapping is everyone's got a certain level for pain. Everyone's got a certain threshold for their ability to manage that pain. And then ultimately, when comparing their pain and their threshold to manage that pain versus an alternative, if the cost of the alternative or the pain of change is viewed on par with the pain of the same, then why is somebody going to choose to go through a painful change management process? Mm. I, like you, agree. Most people will do what they can to avoid pain. I guess my approach was really talking about what a lot of B2B marketers do, and then what we should be doing in order to actually be better at what it is we're trying to accomplish. And so too many marketers, I think, in the spirit of trying to scale or having messages that apply to broader audiences, spend a lot of time on intermittent pain. I mean, there's the slogan or the sexy term of digital transformation. Your company needs to go through a digital transformation process. We as a company can help you with that digital transformation. We can solve a lot of things, whether it's in your supply chain or your plant operations or how you interact with your customers to create a better experience for them, and pile on 10 other cool things we can do as part of this digital transformation agenda, or not agenda, but goal that we mutually share.
Sure.
Well, great. Sounds exciting. Yes, my CEO talks a lot about that. We need to find ways in order to be digitally more proficient. Some of these manual Excel-based kind of processes that we have on the back end aren't great, and they got errors in them and some security issues and whatnot. But then those conversations just keep going on ad nauseum. And ultimately, action, the intended actions, don't seem to transpire out of those kind of conversations that you would think that they would do, even if there's a lot of mutual agreement. And that's because those conversations, from my eyes, are kind of coming at things from an intermittent pain perspective. You're trying to address something that an organization or a person or both have come to live with for 10 years.
Right.
They can manage through that pain. There's an understanding there's a better way, but why disrupt something that's working? And so what I think we as marketers need to do is be a lot more specific and targeted and focused with those messages, understand the individual customers better, and tailor those macro messages into something that's very specific, that's addressing a very specific acute pain point that has costs and financial implications or growth inhibiting implications for that customer, and be able to articulate a message around how you can specifically help with that acute pain. You know, it's one thing to go to the doctor because you kind of have this kind of chronic thing that kind of comes and goes in your elbow. It's another thing when you maybe bust a tooth and your nerves are telling you, I need to see a dentist 30 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Or 30 minutes ago. And so when you have that acute pain, you're urgently going to take action to solve it. If you have that intermittent pain, you're not necessarily going to urgently take action to solve it. Never mind if it's intermittent, it kind of comes and goes and it's even more difficult. So we spend too much time on intermittent and chronic pain, and we as marketers don't spend enough time really addressing acute pain at a specific client or personal level, because that's the avenue for people to move forward, take action, and do something differently to address what it is that is acutely painful for them at that moment. And then once you have that relationship and you can be a trusted partner and solve that acute pain, I think you're much then better positioned to say, hey, I want to take you on a journey. We had this great start. We had some really great success. We alleviated this acute pain that you have. Here are some other opportunities. And based on my experience working with a lot of other companies like yours, here's the next two or three things that I think have the most material impact for your organization. Let's talk about that and see what that looks like. And then you can take the journey forward.
So I think an observation and then a follow-up question is, I want you to share some examples of what do you think is low-hanging fruit, or what's in your experience in the past, what have you seen done that really did solve? Or is every situation so unique that there's not here's where the problems usually are, here's where the acute pain usually happens? My observation is that I think the intermittent pain it makes sense. And I've been members of CEO roundtables, and my staff said it was terrible because every month I'd come home with the new best idea. And I was feeling pain and I was serious when I shared that and said, well, got to pursue this. But it was intermittent. And then next month I had a new idea and drove them crazy. So I think that's a warning sign for marketers. But the acute pain does tend to get the resources assigned to it quickly.
Absolutely.
And that's what I heard you say.
Yeah, that's a great way to distill it down.
Yeah. So what are the cases where you've seen some acute pain and how did you solve them?
If you want to take generalizations, I think if you can help a customer be a better supplier or vendor to their customers, that's absolutely acute pain. And so from a supply chain perspective, if you are not able to capture orders, receive and confirm those orders accurately, and provide an Amazon-like experience to alert your customers' customers with regards to the status and the movement of that shipment ultimately through to your customer's buyer in a way that's transparent and accurate and all the dimensions around that, that's acute pain. Yep. Because if a company out there is struggling with being able to capture and fulfill orders in an efficient way that comes along with it a great customer experience, and their competitor has those digital capabilities in order to do that, so they're losing deals to company B when you're selling to company A, that's acute pain.
That's amazing. And that's really value creation too. It's understanding. So in value creation, we always look at, typically look at revenue. How is our B2B product going to help you create more revenue or maybe reduce your operating costs? But that third leg of the stool, that emotional contribution, what's the value to helping a potential buyer be more successful with their customer? Absolutely. There's a premium, right? I'll pay for that. You mentioned Amazon.
Yeah.
The other day, somebody said something to me, why would you buy that on Amazon? You know, you could get it for $3 less or $2 less or whatever it was. I couldn't sit on my patio sipping my cup of coffee and have it show up tomorrow, and I can tell where it is through the entire journey. I'll pay $2 for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I would every day.
Yeah, and I do.
Many people do.
It's amazing. Yeah. So what? How good do you have to be to have a company that sells the journey so well that you launch your own fleet of airplanes and trucks?
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
That's a pretty good day.
Yeah. Another great example would be coming at it from a supply chain perspective is when you're dealing with raw materials that go into making something else in construction, those raw materials ultimately are a building or a road or a bridge. In my past life, those raw materials would have ultimately gone into all kinds of products, whether it's paint or an automobile or et cetera. And so if you can, from a financial perspective, demonstrate that people can get more yield out of the materials that they're buying from you and equip that customer of yours to be able to, again, work with their customer to maximize the yield and productivity out of those materials, that definitely is an acute pain that has a direct impact on your customer's bottom line. And so there's that efficiency and maximization of value play that always can be a recurring acute pain. And then from another dimension in the supply chain, people are afraid to run out of things, because if you run out of things, your plant shuts down and you can't continue to produce. And then if you have orders coming in for the things that you produce and you can't make it, that puts you at a distinct disadvantage. So without a lot of sophistication, what most companies choose to do is carry way too much inventory in order to avoid shutdowns in production. The problem with that, though, from a financial perspective, is working capital.
Yeah.
And obvious, right? And so if you can reliably address, especially in a big enterprise, a multi-million dollar working capital problem, and
it gets real,
ensure that you don't have a shutdown risk as a result of leaning some of that working capital, that's an acute pain. Yeah. That's something that gets people attention when you start to look at multi-million dollar impact of working capital within one company's business.
And I want everybody to hear, Ed, what you're saying. You never once talked about your own product. You never once talked about what you did. All you did was talk about what the buyers of your product need.
Yep.
It's not about you, Ed.
Oh, I know. I know. And that's, I guess, maybe going back to episode one, my early days in radio, it was never about me as the host. It was about the audience.
Yeah.
So maybe that's where that mindset came from the very first day. And I've always had that. But at the end of the day, all those examples I gave are solved through digital transformation journeys.
Right.
Doesn't make that statement untrue. But if you just leave it there,
right,
you're not going to get the action you're looking for. So that's the variation between that acute pain versus that chronic pain and the effort, that next level of effort that needs to go into really making a change within the mindset of your customers that you're marketing to.
And I will say, over the decades I've done this, almost every time, especially you guilty CEOs, I'll hear, nobody knows my customer like me. I don't need to go out and talk to them. So usually what I do is I'll say, I'll tell you what, I'm going to charge you $10. I charge a little more than that, but I'm going to charge you $10 to go talk to your customers. And if when I come back, if you don't learn anything, if it's a waste of your time, I'll refund your 10 bucks on the spot. And most CEOs will be like, all right. I've never had to give the 10 bucks back.
Yeah, it's awesome. It does not surprise me.
It's just hard. So if you're thinking through this, the natural course of action, because you've built this thing you build, you've written the code, you've been in the industry for decades, you naturally want to say you get it and you understand it. Just give two great examples of the rewards of just taking the risk. Just go out and learn where that pain is coming from. So slow down. Does that sound familiar?
Unfortunately.
Does that sound like your wife, maybe? In my car, if I hear somebody yell, slow down, it's either me yelling at my daughter, learning how to drive, or it's my wife telling me. So, anybody who's married or has a significant other, they hear it from the passenger, right? They hear slow down. And, it doesn't matter how many years I've gone without an accident or how few tickets I've had, I still hear slow down. Well, in the interest of marriage, I do slow down.
Smart man.
And it's usually okay, right? But, there are passengers, and the passenger's point of view is very different from the driver, right? When I'm driving, I always feel in control and I feel safe with my speed. When it swaps and I'm in the passenger seat, now I'm the one over there going, slow down, slow down. Mm-hmm. So we live in business, and fast is not fast enough.
Yeah, I think just the clock speed of the demands of business and what some massive organizations are able to demonstrate with regards to their ability to speed to market solutions that address very specific acute pain that's happening today is very impressive. And unfortunately, some of the smaller, you would think more nimble companies that should be able to do that better than some of the larger, dispersed type of organizations you would think would struggle to do that the most. So that example really specifically came from the impact of COVID-19 and what that really did to fundamentally address the market problems and disruption that was happening. And it specifically amplifies in every company's mind, I believe, the need to be able to move faster and be responsive, in particular during times where the black swan event happens and your fundamental thinking is disrupted. And so from our example as a company dealing with construction being essential work and projects happening, there was this immediate acute pain that was injected into the process of how a particular project gets done. And long story short is a lot of construction was still very paper-based, a lot of very face-to-face interactions between different constituents on the job site, the driver, and the material suppliers that were delivering to those construction sites. And so we saw an immediate need for people to be more safe on the job, remove some of that paperwork or a significant amount of that paperwork and remove that human-human interaction that now became much more riskier than what it was previously, which was at that time just viewed as an inefficiency. But now it went from being an inefficiency to a real danger. And so me and a team member in strategy got together and quickly came up with a skinny down version of a technology application that allowed us to basically e-order and e-deliver and address those interactions in a digital way so that the driver didn't have to shuffle paperwork. They could remain safe in the cab. Materials could be ordered at the job site and accepted at the job site without having to sign paperwork and all this good thing. I think the exciting thing about it was when we started that discussion, involved other members of the commercial team within our organization, and to announcing this capability, it was 7 days.
It's amazing.
And so we already had a working application, a process, the landing pages built, the PR built around it before March even ended. And if you think about it, it was mid-March when things really just started shutting down. And so we, as an organization, really took a lot of pride in knowing we were doing the right thing for our customers at that moment. We're keeping people safe. We think our place in that vertical almost gave us the onus to do something about it. We even offered this skinny capability for free so that we removed any friction with regards to adoption based on commercial terms. And it became an inflection point for us to start building community on the supply chain platform I talked about earlier. All the right reasons. Everyone was really good about it. It's paid dividends for our customers' customers, us as a company. And it's, between the end of March and now, been an inflection point in the growth of participation on the platform in a way that we probably wouldn't have seen without the Black Swan event of COVID-19. So it really is a win-win-win for everybody involved.
So this rapid pivot, what's the plan to monetize it eventually when it's appropriate?
As I mentioned, it was a skinnier version. There's some key functionality that people are desirous of and would ultimately pay for on a sort of per order basis that we're already starting to see now here a couple months.
That's brilliant.
Post that. And I relate that to other peers in the marketing world, especially in the B2B marketing world, that I've heard conversations with through networking, been in other roundtables, and they didn't have anything in March, didn't even have anything in April, started putting some stuff out in mid-May. Mm. Well, the urgency is not what it was.
Yep.
It was too late. And then hearing them talk, they were like, oh, we thought we had this great news story and the people would cover it. And they're like, oh. And then they were surprised to learn from the media and the PR side of the house that, oh, we've had thousands of these stories already. We were kind of talked out of that. We're on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And I can see or kind of envision in the background all the bureaucratic things probably within their organization, all the folks that hand wrung over every little detail for weeks on end about what they were going to do and everything else. And ultimately, huge missed opportunity because they couldn't move fast enough.
Is this where the idea of a tiger team comes into play?
Yeah, that's exactly what we did. Put a tiger team on it, put focused resources on it. Didn't overthink every little thing. Didn't try to manage to every little exception. Put together something that was going to address 80%+ of the problem immediately. And then
that's brilliant.
Be okay with understanding there's a level of ambiguity when you do that, and that you as competent, smart tiger team can address some of those unknowns as they evolve, if they even evolve at all.
So there's a lot of lessons in that for the executive who's trying to lead this marketing thing. But I think what's interesting inherently, what you just talked about was marketing's role in product development, marketing's role in to the pain question. You know, it was focused on pain, the customer pain. How do you solve it? But, you know, interestingly enough, and this is a whole nother conversation, we won't get into this today, but you really spoke of risk reduction. What you were selling was, in essence, risk reduction. So in turn, you would have, in a litigious world, arguably, that was a defensible position for your company, in addition to being a profitable and a good and right thing to do. Sometimes I think we forget to do good and right things just because that's good and right, you know? And so I think risk reduction, marketing's role in risk reduction, is an oft not talked about and misunderstood role of marketing. But we'll get into that later. So I love the fast is not fast enough. Anything I should have asked you about fast is not fast enough?
No, I just think that when you look at the normal tempo of B2B type of businesses, there's probably too much
navel gazing.
That's one way to put it. Or even just enamored with the process, the quarterly business reviews, planning some calendar out 12 months from now. And I've always been the guy, and maybe people haven't liked me, but I would always say, you know, that's pretty audacious that you think that you today know what's best to communicate 9 months from today. That's an amazing talent. And I wish I could do that, but I can't.
Not to mention the 5-year plan.
Yes. What I do know, though, is a willingness to talk to customers, engage the market, be willing to learn, experiment, do the right things through that, and pivot and adjust accordingly. And what you might think today needs to be 9 months from now in your content plan, you actually kind of accelerate the process, be okay with learning through the process, that you'll fundamentally understand that maybe it's a bit arrogant to think that that's the way you should be operating your business.
Yeah. So all of you who have marketing departments that did, because it was so popular about 2 years ago to build a customer persona and tape it up to the wall in the office.
Yep.
You think that's different today?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. It was different a month ago, right? Yeah. It was different 2 months ago. It was different. So not that you have to do them every month. In fact, I think it is wise to have one and to understand it, but it's a fluid living document, right?
Absolutely.
That's really moving down to the tactical level, not the strategic, but it's a really simple example of it, of how it's important.
I think what clouds people's perspective there too, and I was in a recent conversation, is, oh, we hired this firm, and this is no slight on you. We did this project.
It was me?
No. Okay. No, not you personally. No, we hired this firm, not you, a firm.
You should have hired us.
Maybe they should have. And they did this project. We spent a lot of money on it. And then you look at the details of what that plan was. Well, it was written in 2017. And then you look at what their presence is today, and it is 99% of what this firm proposed that they do back in 2017. Mm-hmm. And then they're not growing like they think they should be growing, and the level of engagement for what it is they're selling isn't what they expected it to be, and can't see that if they paid for this project 3 years ago, what you are fundamentally today is reflective of what you paid for this project 3 years ago and didn't evolve or change or adjust or learn anything over those 36 months.
Right.
Well, that problem starts there.
Exactly. True. I sit as a fractional CMO on one of my clients' executive teams, and we review the strategic plan every 3 months. I mean, yeah, there's a 3 and a 5 and a 10 year. Mm-hmm. Every 3 months, we're looking at it, because you can imagine the work we did to prepare for first quarter and the work we did to prepare for second quarter. How do you think third? I mean, with the work we did to prepare for second quarter, forget it. You know, I guess it would have been the work for first quarter, forget it. Second quarter, we'll see. That's out of the water. Hey, it'll be third quarter until. So if we just had the plan and didn't, you get it. Everybody here is smarter than me, so this is great.
No, there's so much depth too fast. Today isn't fast enough. I really think having an agile mindset and not letting your pride get in the way of, you thought you knew something, I had this intellectual investment in this thing I did 6 months ago or a year ago, and you've become too enamored with what you thought was right at that time. And perhaps at that time, it was 100% spot on.
Sure.
But things change and evolve. And so that's one of the things I've learned, and I think has made me an effective leader, is never get too enamored with your own theories and your own biases in a way that it becomes your own obstacle that you can't overcome.
So if I'm in the passenger seat and I'm looking at you going, slow down, man, there might be actually a reason, and I just need to roll with it. I need to trust you driving. I need to be okay with the speed, and let's get stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think we need to push these last two conversations into a brief third episode. You okay?
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
I know you're getting hungry. You're looking famished. So, all right. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Thank you for joining us on Aligned, the podcast for executives of emerging middle market companies, executives who are looking for new levers to pull, new ways to think about sales and marketing to improve their shareholder value and their own returns. Thank you.